What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative. I'm your host, Brett McGrath. Today is the collector conversation. We're unlocking a new character, my man Brian at Prism Mike PC. He has been writing some awesome articles for the Patreon group, and I wanted to bring him in to share some of that. Today, we're talking about gathering information from good resources. We'll talk about his articles, the collection, and everything in between. If you want to show your support for the Stacking Slabs podcast, best way you can do that is go to the link in the show notes, join that Patreon group at any level you feel comfortable with. We do appreciate it. I'm excited to share this conversation with you. It is a sign of a lot of the engagement that we're having over there in the group. Happy Friday. Let's kick into the conversation. All right. I am excited to talk cards, talk about today's topic with new guest on the show. I've got Brian. He goes by Prism Mike PC on Instagram. We have been chatting a lot, and I love his collection, and he produced a couple articles for our group that I thought were awesome. And in one of the articles, one of the intros, he talked a little bit about information in the hobby and what we kind of consume and how we consume it. And he comes from a background in education. So I think it would be a fun topic to dig into and, you know, dig into his collection, which I've got his Instagram page up and I'm looking at now. But without further ado, Brian, welcome, man. How are you?
I'm well. It's a pleasure, Brett.
Should we preview with the audience that we're actually being very cordial right now, but we have, even though we are approaching, I guess it would be game five here as we record this, we've got a little Bucks-Pacers rivalry going on, so we're trying to be as nice as possible and just talk cards. But what do you make so far of, I know it's, you've got your best players out, which is beneficial to me as a Pacers fan, but what do you make so far of this series?
I mean, the Pacers are impressive, especially last night. You know, it's just they're hitting shots. The Bucks, you know, I don't know how much of a difference it would have made the way they shot last night. I know they showed during the game there was a screen on the Bucks broadcast of the Jumbotron at the arena, and they're showing they're like at one point 53% field goal percentage, like 56% threes. I mean, when you're shooting like that, I don't know how much you can do, regardless of who's on the floor, who's not on the floor. And I really don't want it, you know, if the Bucks do lose this, I don't want it to go down as like, oh, the Bucks had injuries and that's why they lost. But I mean, the Pacers earned it one way or another if they do go on to win this. I mean, if Giannis comes back, pulls a rabbit out of his hat, you know, fights back and, you know, comes back in this series and somehow we get Lillard back, and that's great. But I mean, the Pacers are a damn good team. So all the way around, I mean, they've earned this 3-1 lead.
So I want to ask a question about just being a Bucks fan and winning a championship. Like, I'm kind of on this kick where I'm like very fascinated with fandom and then also like connecting fandom back with cards. But in thinking about just like Bucks, like the Bucks have been like really, really successful recent enough where you've won a championship. You know, Giannis had the MVPs and then he won the championship. When you're in a moment like now where it's not ideal, and who knows, by the time this goes live, this could all be evened out and I'll be miserable and then you'll be happy. But right now, you know, Pacers up 3-1. It's not a great situation for Milwaukee. Like, how much do you kind of hold on to the fact that, like, you know what, like, we just won a championship not too long ago? That's really freaking hard to do. So you kind of got to deal with some adversity after the fact and then just hope we get back. Like, do you still hold on to that championship, or are you just like focusing on like what's now or what's in the future?
I'll rank it, you know, based on the other teams that I follow in the state. So the Brewers, Bucks, and Packers, those are my teams. I've been going to games for every one of those teams since I was a kid, like have season tickets at Lambeau, been a Brewers season ticket holder and was going to games when nobody was going to games at County Stadium and early at Miller Park. I think like with the Packers, it's really weird because with the Packers, I get more frustrated. Every year, I feel like they should win a Super Bowl. I don't know why. I think it's because I grew up watching Brett Favre and then Aaron Rodgers. I think it's just that. And then like all the tradition before them. With the Brewers, like I would give anything. That's like that is like my ultimate for the Brewers to win a World Series, because I feel in baseball it's like so hard. It seems like it's near impossible, and every year is an uphill battle, especially being a smaller market and everything that the Brewers have went through. With the Bucks, it's kind of like a balance in between, because they've won previously, you know, a long time ago, and then they won just recently. And it's like, with basketball, it's somewhere I feel like in between baseball and difficulty, baseball and football. So if that makes sense, it's kind of, I think with the way I view the Bucs is that we have one of the best players in NBA and one of the great players in NBA history in Giannis. And I feel like as long as we have him and now a complementary talent with Lillard, I'm just kind of enjoying this. Is it frustrating that we lost last year? Yeah. And I feel like we should have done better, underachieved. Is it frustrating that we're down again this year? Yeah, but I guess I'm not really that upset, because, you know, I'm not saying the injuries are an excuse, but it's like we do have a good core. The team's getting older. They got to do something here in the next few years, I think. But I'm not too frustrated, really, if that's – I'm kind of like just even keel watching it. Maybe we'll see something special with Giannis if he comes back. I don't know.
So I want to dig into your Packers stuff, because I think, and Brewers in your collection. But before, I want to talk about maybe the current Packers real quick. And I want to get your opinion, because you've moved from, you know, having, you know, Roger or Favre to Rodgers, and now you have Jordan Love. And I'm big on team Jordan Love. Mostly it started with, and I try not to talk about like the degenerate gambling, but sometimes when you've got events like Thanksgiving and you're sitting around doing degenerate things like eating a bunch of food and stuff, you place a bet or two on a game you're watching. And I just remember being a fan of Jordan Love big time after he came through for me on Thanksgiving against the Lions. So I'm like, this guy's pretty good. And then he had like a stellar run at the end of the season. How are you feeling about that position, which is so iconic in Green Bay, with the new QB1 and what's to come going into next season?
Yeah, I mean, we have to deal with, as a Packer fan, we have to deal with, you know, stray bullets from Bears fans, Lions fans, Vikings. So I've heard everything over the years about this, that, and the other thing. I've always been a Love supporter. I always thought that I trust in the Packers leadership and their GM always. And I think that starts back from Ron Wolf early on with Brett Favre coming over. The Packers around that time with Holmgren and Ron Wolf, they started this draft and development idea where they were going to go get a guy who had talent that they could develop into a player that they wanted on their team and build a team around them. And they've done that since Favre. They did it with Rodgers, and now they did it with Jordan Love. I think there's something to be said about a guy who's going to sit for a few years, learn from. We're lucky enough to have Hall of Fame quarterbacks that these guys are learning from, but they learn and they grow, and they build a system around the quarterback. And at Green Bay, they focus on the quarterback. They build a system around the quarterback and they build a team around them. And I think that shows in like the advanced stats. You know, if you look at the QBR that I know Chris Carlatter likes to talk about the advanced stats, but it's true. Like if you look at it, Love is, you know, pretty significant in those rankings, any metric that you look at. And I think that has a lot to do with the players that they've surrounded him with, the coaching staff they surrounded him with. And I don't see, when you have the advanced stats like that, I don't see it being like a one hit wonder. Like I don't see it being a fluke. It's the guys that have like a phenomenal year, but their advanced stats are not there. Like where they just throw for a lot of touchdowns or a lot of yards. There's a lot of things that can cause a quarterback to throw for a lot of yards or touchdowns. I mean, we see that with a lot of quarterbacks, you know, every year, you know, a rookie comes out, looks great. Defenses start to learn about him, read him. And then the next year, you know, he's not as good. And a lot of that has to do with the amount of information, amount of things that are at the resources that teams have. But I see Rodgers. I'm excited, just like every other Packer fan. I think he's going to be great moving forward. I don't know. I can't say he's going to be like a Hall of Famer or anything. I'm not going to do that. But getting Josh Jacobs, that defense, you know, they got a really young defense, and maybe this will be the time where they're just going to have a really balanced offense, a smart quarterback. He looks a lot like Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball. It's kind of crazy. I mean, anybody can see it. Just, I think he learned a lot from him. And, you know, hopefully that defense is nasty like they say it's going to be this year. So
I scroll your page and I see a lot of Packers green and Brewers. So, like, you obviously, like, gravitate towards your favorite teams, which is a fun way to collect. I think there's a lot of different ways within taking that approach to, you know, build a collection. Maybe talk a little bit about kind of how you organize your collection, players, types of cards, anywhere you want to take it.
It wasn't always like that. So I started my Instagram account not too long ago, a few years ago, I think, but I've been collecting for a really long time. And I was trying to avoid getting on Instagram because when the pandemic hit, and then, you know, I would see the stuff pop up on YouTube and all that. And I just wanted like no part of it. It was just disgusting. I'd see people falling all over each other at Target to get boxes. And it's just like, I didn't want any part of it. And, you know, I bounce back and forth between collecting cards and mainly memorabilia. I've always, my entire life, I got into cards because I was collecting sports memorabilia, getting autographs at Milwaukee County Stadium back in the early 90s, getting guys coming out of taxi cabs and buses from the other team, signing like, you know, Griffey and Thomas. And I mean, just stuff like that. And I got into cards where I was getting cards signed by players. So then I started collecting cards in like 1993. And, you know, I would collect cards kind of parallel with autographs and memorabilia. And then, you know, over time it started just shift to vintage because my dad was into vintage. So, you know, I learned a lot about vintage collecting and that kind of built a base for me. And I was always collecting 90s because I love Favre, but I wasn't buying the same stuff. So I would say my page didn't start looking like it does now until about maybe like a year and a half ago. I would occasionally buy, I'd post a lot of vintage stuff. I don't do that much anymore. I just kind of collect it on the side. But I started really getting into rare stuff and rare stuff on my team. And I try to use certain players of my team. So I'm a team collector, I guess, but like I'm mainly a Favre collector and Rodgers collector too. So I try to pick players from my team, go deep into their collections, but not every player. So like, I'm not going to go crazy about like a Robert Brooks or a Chimura. Like I'll get some of their bigger cards if it's in like a little team run that I'm trying to do. But I try to do like a hybrid of collecting players from the teams and going deep into their collections. Cause then that scratches the itch for the need for me to be a player collector, which I really like doing. But then also with the team stuff, I have a little bit of a, you know, a desire to be a team collector and a set collector, but I don't want to collect like a full set. So I kind of get like team sets or parallel runs of the team. So I try to just do like a hybrid. So I don't go crazy and start buying, which I was doing. I would buy like, oh, I like Terrell Davis. I'll start a PC of his. I like Steve Young. I'll do that. Or like Frank Thomas. But then it's like, I don't get anywhere because every time a Favre card pops up, it's like, oh, I got to sell. And it just gets, so I just stopped doing that recently. And it's just, I've really tried to just focus on Brewers and Packers and then the Florida Gators stuff that I get. But
making sure like everyone listening understands this approach, because I like this approach a lot. So you've got, let's take the Packers, for example. So you've got Favre and Rodgers who are like primary guys. And then, so you'll player collect them, but then like, say there is a specific parallel set that maybe Favre or Rodgers is in, and you look at that, and because maybe you like the card, or that parallel, that you'll decide, hey, let me just go and try to get all of the Packers that are in this set. And it'll give me the chance to kind of dig in and do the team set collecting thing with an anchor point of a player like a Favre or a Rodgers. Is that kind of the approach that you take?
Yeah. And it took a lot of practice to get to that. it took a lot of like buying stuff that I really liked. There's a really fine line that I didn't know about until I started doing this recently. There's a fine line between like buying cards that you really, really like and you feel like you need in the moment, and then cards that you absolutely love. Like the way that I think that you can tell a difference is if you get those two cards, one that you really, really like that you think is awesome, and then one card that you love, and somebody comes up to you and offers you well over comps for each one, which one would you be willing to sell? That was the test. And like with my Favre stuff, like I bounced around the idea when I need to consolidate. I'm like, well, I could just quick sell these Favre cards that a couple of them that I could get back to get something else. And then I like battle with myself. I'm like, no, why am I doing that? I'll sell something else. And it just like, it never happened. So, I mean, it wasn't always like that. And I think it just takes practice. You got to buy cards and sell them and just go through and really find and dig into what you like. And then like with the 97 essential credentials. So like I start with the Favre and I'm like, well, I really want to start collecting Freeman too, because I like collecting the quarterbacks with their top targets. So then I buy the Freeman and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to get the Chimura and the Reggie White and I'll just complete that run. And then I love the red PM or the PMGs in general, the 97 PMG set. So I started buying those. I bought some of the cheaper ones like the Andre Rison and the Sean Jones and then the Freeman green. I'm like, well, I want to have a green in that run because it's part of the run. And then I eventually got the Favre and it's like, I'm just going to complete the whole thing. And just, so you just kind of start buying them. The things that stick. And then the things that don't, I mean, you might keep it for a while, think it's cool. And then when something else comes up that you want more, you'll know what to do. I mean, you'll just feel like I got to sell this. And once you've said it before, and I've heard a lot of other people say it, once it pops in your mind that, hey, I should sell this, it's over, because it's always there. It like plants a seed, it's like a bomb. And then eventually it just goes off and you just sell. So
have you, through this process, what have you found set? You mentioned a few there. Has there been a set that you weren't sure you were going to be into, but then it ended up being something that you like have deep affinity for that like kind of surprised you going through this process?
Gold Prism. I have a friend that I go to a lot of card shows with. We're not far from Rosemont, so we go to all the like the smaller shows there, like the sports spectaculars and stuff, and we drive down there, and he's into modern basketball, and he buys modern basketball. He's not a flipper, but he likes to buy modern basketball to sell, and then he funds like he collects like Bobby Portis. So he buys and sells like 90s stuff and even like Prism. He loves Prism. So he's always buying Prisms. And I'm like, yeah, I like Prism, but I'm more into the 90s and even with like the vintage cards at the time. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what it was. I saw a guy on Instagram. It's he had a whole – well, actually, I saw it on eBay. He had a bunch of gold Rogers that he was selling. And I messaged him on Instagram, and I'm like, God, I gotta have these. I gotta start buying these. So that's when I got the 2013 Gold Rogers, that was it. Once I got that thing in hand, I mean, it's one thing to see it, but like the 2013s, they're shiny. And then when I got that, that was like, I gotta start buying more Prism. So then I just started loving them. I think Gold Prism is just, it's something special. I mean, everybody talks about it, you talk about it, but when you start getting them, and other players too, and even gold vinyls, I think there's something to be said about Prism. So I think that was one set that I didn't really know until I got it. And then once I got it, it's like, I got to keep getting them.
I mean, and I feel this way. Somebody, when I posted it today, just in the group, and I don't think about it, but people comment on it. And you've got this, like, especially with like the, like when I get like a Halliburton Pacers card, you get the gold and gold color match. And I'm just looking at like, your 2013 Rogers here, and it's just like you get the color match with the gold too. So it's when you have the color involved too, it's almost like an added bonus, which makes it fun.
Yeah, I felt like it was like I was obligated to start buying Packers golds because it's like the ultimate color match. So it's like I have to get them. Plus they're out of 10. Plus if there's like, you know, I think about like nostalgia, and I worry with the Prism brand, is there going to be a lot of nostalgia for Prism in general because there's so many parallels. And there's so many people that just buy these cards with dollar signs and, you know, in their head, and they're not really like collecting, like you remember, you know, collecting like, you know, 90s cards that you just loved them. I worry, is that going to be part of Prism? But then you look at the golds and it's like the people that get golds or find golds or even like the black 101s, like that's going to stick because when people do come back and look at Prism, like you talk about a lot, or even the Optic Golds, when they look at those and they're like, you know, these are special cards. And gold is always, you look through the years, gold in general, from, you know, it doesn't matter what the numbering is really, people just love golds.
Do you feel like, so I get caught up in this a lot where I'm like, it took me like 5 years back in the hobby to finally come to this conclusion of like, I like chromium based cards like 10 times more than I like any other type of card. And so because I like the cards itself, because they're shiny, they are the cards that I typically gravitate to. So now I'm in this like motion where it's like, if the cards don't fit that category within my collection, it doesn't matter the player, it doesn't matter the serial number. If they don't fit that lane and I need to consolidate, typically those are the ones to go. Just in looking at your page and the types of even 90s parallels that you have, I feel like that shine is an element that you appreciate too. Do you feel like that's maybe a connection point between your, like, say collecting a 24 karat gold Brett Favre to collecting a, you know, 2013 Aaron Rodgers gold Prism? Like the elements of those cards, while they're different eras, they both have that shine to it. So is that something you gravitate towards when you're kind of spending your money on your collection?
Yeah, definitely. The aesthetic is, you know, with the mirror golds or the gold refractor, or, you know, chromium cards in general are one. And I love hollow foil too, because I think it's got that, it's foil. I love foil cards. I grew up on like foil cards. So back, you know, earlier 90s, I wasn't really getting finest refractors back then. I was getting a lot of, you know, I was a big rookie card collector because, again, my dad did vintage. And now he sees prices of cards. I talk to him about prices of cards. He doesn't believe me. He thinks I'm lying. But I'm like, I'm showing him stuff, and he can't even take it. It like frustrates him. But, you know, like the Derek Jeter SP rookie, like that all foil set. Like just, I grew up on those foil cards, like the Alex Rodriguez foil rookies. So the SP cards that were always foil in the 90s, that's what I loved. And then when metal came out, it was like, that was it for me. I'm like an all foil card with like comic book type stuff on it. Like what's better? So foil was my first love. But then when you can combine like shine, like the PMGs have with foil, it was like,
I mean, game over.
That's the ultimate. And then, you know, now it's like refractors. So anything in the 2000s and beyond was all gold refractors. And I remember, and I collect a lot of Ryan Braun, as you can see on the page, and like those early, those 2000s Brewers, like 2007, 2008, and then beyond, I got a major love for them because the Ned Yost era in baseball. I was in college at UW-Milwaukee, so we were always going to day games. I spent most of my time at Miller Park when I was in college. It was either going to class or going to games at Miller Park. And when they broke through to the playoffs in 08, like the CC Sabathia year and all that, I mean, it was just crazy. And, you know, with Ryan Braun, I remember at his peak, I wanted to buy golds of him. And I remember being, you know, a broke college student, and the things are going for like $100 or more. And that's like a lot of money. I mean, that's partying money, and that's like living ramen noodles money and stuff. So I wasn't getting them. So now I can go back and get them for like $15-$20. Like it's great. So that's where the love of the gold started back in like earlier 2000s, because it was like something I couldn't get of the player I wanted because I didn't have the money. And now looking back, it's just, I mean, it's easy for me to pick up a Braun if it's available. So
So what I appreciate in your page and looking at Ryan Braun cards is I feel like the last era of me playing fantasy baseball, I was like with my second or third pick, I was like picking Ryan Braun. So I literally would like watch his stats and watch him like every game. And he was sick. Like, and so when I see your cards on his page now, I remember like not being a fan of the Brewers, but just like being a fan of Ryan Braun because of the whole fantasy element. And he's like a guy that's kind of just been out of sight, out of mind for me for a while. But I think that's the fun part about, like, we'll talk about the bad misinformation of what happens on Instagram and other sources, but I feel like that's the good of Instagram, where you can see another player and that triggers the memory of something like that.
Yeah. And Prince Fielder. And like I can't post. I try to post a lot of decent cards of them, but I can't. I have more. I just like I can't. I can't live at my scanner and just post all these golds of like Prince Fielder and Ben Sheets. I mean, it's just like I love all those guys, and I think that's the fun of collecting. But it took me a while though to get to that point, because you try to fight it, like, you know, as you're like, I'm buying a bunch of Ben Sheets cards, and it's like you're fighting it because everybody else or everything else you see is not buying, you know, Brewers from the early 2000s or buying everything else. So when you first start kind of finding your footing, even though I didn't really leave, I kind of slowed down collecting, obviously, through college. And then when COVID hit, when prices were so high, I was really heavy during COVID into setting up like my basement and my rec room area and all that with like autographs and jerseys. And I was still going to shows and getting signings. So when COVID shut down, we couldn't go to signings. So I'm like, well, I'm not just, I like the fun of getting autographs from you is like meeting the players and going to the shows with my dad. So when that shut down, I couldn't do it, but I didn't want to buy cards because they were expensive as can be. And even cards that I knew were like a quarter of the price before COVID were way up. So I'm like, well, I can't do that. So I kind of waited. And then things started coming down. And then when I started buying cards again, because I was like fiending to do it, I started buying like Tom Brady and stuff because I like him and I always watched him and it's nostalgic. But I'm like, I'm paying all this money for like a card that's out of 2000. It's like, why am I doing that? I mean, I just need to start buying like Favre or, you know, other things. So I started narrowing down, and you just, over time, you start hearing things from other collectors like that really hits you differently. You know, they start, and even podcasts like yours, like the rarity, the scarcity, and that stuff starts to mean something. And then collecting like players that you have a real strong emotional attachment to, otherwise they're not going to stick. And the Brewers and the Packers are, you know, the teams that I really, really connect with. And that's where everything kind of funneled into this now. And I'm actually happier now collecting than I've ever been, because I finally feel like I found what I want to continue to collect, and I don't want to get sidetracked anymore. So
that's the, yeah, I'm with, it takes a while. I think about it probably way too much, but it takes a while, but it's fun when you finally get there. I want to dig. So you wrote a couple articles that were awesome. The beginning of your 97 embossed refractors article, which I wanted to, we'll talk about that article and just like all the information gathered. But before we do that, you talked about in the opening of that, just alluding to like how you come from a background in education and how you talked about like examples of teachers who kind of adapt and or don't adapt and what happens in that scenario. And then you talk about just misinformation and how misinformation is such a source of information in the hobby, which was kind of this like lead up into this article about a type of card that really like is really confusing, and a lot of people make up stuff about it. And I don't know if I responded back to you about this, but like I've avoided those cards because I couldn't get the information together or couldn't figure it out. And you just like took the time to like consolidate it all into one source, which was phenomenal. So I want to talk about just like your thoughts on the setup of that article and just maybe like the kind of the main theme of this conversation. Like, I think in all walks of life, like misinformation is probably the worst it's ever been before, but maybe talk about like the spirit of like where you were coming from in the open to that.
So one thing that I've learned, I mean, through education, just through life in general, I think a lot of people, you know, have experienced it too, is like a mistake is only a mistake if you don't learn from it and grow from it. So in regards to education, all this being an assistant principal for a long time in school, we evaluate teachers and I work with teachers and I coach teachers too. So I had the unique experience of being a licensed special education teacher before I was an assistant principal. And being a special education teacher, you do a lot of team teaching. So I'm up in the classroom and I observe and I sit and watch and I observe teachers because I'm in their classroom working with students with disabilities. And I'm also, you know, co-planning and co-teaching with them. So the teachers that are resistant to having getting feedback from other people or learning things from other people that might have more experience with them, like trying to draw the connection between like me telling a teacher about a student and saying you need to try doing this or that. It's obvious to me because I've experienced like struggles and difficulties with students. So like the same thing, drawing the parallel with cards, I've messed up buying cards that were like fake or backdoor copies or whatever. And every time that I do something like that, I think, okay, that's never going to happen to me again. And I know there's people out there that are confused just like I was. And I'm usually a very skeptical person. So for me to get like duped by stuff, I know there's people that are more trusting than I am that get duped all the time. And I know there's people like yourself that just avoid a set like a 97 embossed refractor because they don't understand it. A lot of people are just like, this is too much work. I don't get it. I'm not even gonna mess with it. So the only reason why I learned about that was because I searched on Blowout because I know Blowout over the years, that was always like my resource back early years of it. I'm like, you didn't have much to go off of. You didn't have IG or anything like that. So I knew Blowout forums and forums in general, whether you're playing video games or whether you're collecting cards, you can go onto forums and there's information. So I went to a forum and I saw Merino Collectors post. He did a huge long write-up about it. And there's people coming at him about like, you're wrong. This is, and he would just argue with them and explain and he have details and it was great. So I learned about it. I'm like, wow. Okay. So this is a messed up situation where, again, backdoor copies have infiltrated the hobby. And it's the same thing with the PMGs. I bought a fake green off of an auction house I'm not going to get into. And it was a really bad experience for me. Luckily, I had people on Instagram who I was friends with tell me that it was fake. Don't pay for that. You shouldn't have bought it. And I got out of it. But I think it's really, we're in the point where the hobby is so, it's so wide open. There's so much information at our fingertips that it can also lead to the negative side of if you don't use the information correctly, you can still get duped. And I think that people are really trusting right now too in the hobby. And there's a lot of people that don't know what they're talking about that have platforms that spread misinformation. There's sites that accidentally spread misinformation. And then there's grading companies. And I'll call it like BGS, for example. They're known for just grading cards that are backdoor copies, mislabeling stuff. And it's like, what is the main purpose of a grading company? The first thing that you're supposed to do is authenticate a card, right? Like the authentic card that comes from a pack, from that set. Well, a backdoor copy does not come from the set, yet they grade them all the time. Thankfully, PSA does it occasionally, but for the most part, PSA is very good. And PSA is also has the guarantee where you could contact them and just give them the information and they will decertify a card or give your money back. You have the guarantee. There's other grading companies that don't do that. So that's frustrating. That's a problem. And then there's also, you know, there's dealers. That's the thing too. You go to shows and there's a lot of great dealers. I'm friends with a lot of people that are dealers and they connect me with cards. Some of my best friends are dealers, but there's also dealers at shows that I guarantee at like any given second, they would love to sell you a backdoor copy that's authenticated by like a BGS or something like that just to get your money. And they will tell you anything you want to hear, or that they want you to hear about a 97 embossed refractor. Yeah, that's just, this is, you know, the same thing as the die cut embossed version. It's the atomic. And they'll pull up something like on Trading Card Database. And that's where I got misinformation from, which again, I love Trading Card Database. It's a great resource, but it's just like anything, you have to filter every bit of information you get. So, I mean, to put everything together and to summarize that, like, I think all this information coming in from different angles, influencers, hobby content creators, dealers, the internet, just whatever, you got to get something and filter it. And I think the best resource to go to is a knowledgeable collector. There's plenty of them on. I reference Merino Collector because I go to him with 90s questions. Plus, like, person I'm friends with on there, Zanu, he knows obviously a lot. He's been on your show. He knows a lot about 90s stuff, but 90s wax, like those collectors, they know what they're talking about and they have no reason to dupe somebody, you know? And if you get into just like an Instagram group of guys that are, or women, a few people that you can bounce ideas off of. They can save you a lot of time, money, frustration. And I think that's the best place to get information from, you know, friends in the hobby and people that you, that have collected for a while.
So it's really interesting that, there's a group of 90s collectors that I definitely, and I'm literally like, I think you just shared a post about it. Like, if you spot a counterfeit out in the wild, and typically they're on other marketplaces, like people will repost it and be like, this is counterfeit, like don't bid on it. And it wasn't a thing. And I don't know if it was a thing, but just hadn't gotten undiscovered and people weren't sharing it out. But it just feels like it is something that has happened so frequently. And like, I always think about the fact that like, if you're not only on Instagram or not on Instagram following the right people, and you're just coming into like this space trying to collect PMGs for the first time, and you spend God knows what on a green and it's not really a green, like that's like a massive problem. So I think what you're suggesting, and just with misinformation is going to always come, but it typically, like, the best way to combat it is to surround yourself with people who know what they're talking about and actually speak up when kind of the bullshit starts happening, you know, across selling platforms and other places.
Yeah. And do research yourself and be open to new information. Cause if you know, like with 97, if you just close down and you don't want to, you know, you just take someone's word for it because it kind of fits like what you're hoping, and you don't second guess things and do research for yourself. Like if I would, when I first wanted to start buying like 97 embossed, if I would just accept the fact, well, these are, you know, these are another parallel or atomics, it's like, or if they were, if I didn't know that they were atomics and I just thought they were embossed refractors because some of the slabs say embossed, and I was like, oh, this is cheaper, whatever, I'll just buy it, then, and I didn't do any research myself, then I would have been out, you know, just like if you, like you talked about the green, and I know you're referencing that PMG green, that stuff, I don't do it for like, you know, clicks or like people to, you know, follow my page or anything. I get frustrated when there's sellers that don't care. Like, it's one thing if you just acknowledge the fact like, hey, I'm selling a BGS slab, it is what it is. But it's like when you want to fight about it and you want to act like it's not a fake or it's not a backdoor copy, and you're going to basically take someone's money, you're kind of just, you're just perpetuating the problem. And you're shut off from learning. You don't want to learn anything new. You don't want to do any research for yourself. It's kind of greed, and it's frustrating because that the hobby has to have this, because it really doesn't. I mean, it just, like coin collectors and stuff. I mean, it's just, I don't think that this stuff is in, I don't collect the stuff, so maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't feel like there's this much craziness or goofiness in those areas. I mean, there's always your bad apples, like with comic books and stuff, but I mean, I don't think it's to this level.
So when we first started talking, you made it, I sense that for you as like a longtime collector, it took you a while to get over the hump and be like, I'm going to open up a card page on Instagram. And then you finally did. I think we get like, I do. I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like I think about the hobby in this like little bubble of like Instagram, when in all actuality, like the hobby is like, they're like hardly anybody's on Instagram in the grand scheme of things. I know that sounds crazy, but there's tons of people, and a lot of them don't post cards or have a page. Maybe like, are you glad you ended up posting a page, because not only like you've kind of built your network and it's given you the opportunity to, you know, share information and bring greater awareness to the bad? Or because you have a page, are you just more exposed to like the bad stuff, and you're like, I don't know why I did this? Like, how do you feel since you made that decision?
Well, it was probably one of the best things I ever did, because being on Instagram, it connected me with like with cards that I wanted. And then you see like other people's collection, you get inspiration. So at first I was really skeptical, because I hate social media in general and like mainstream stuff. I can't stand it. But then getting on there, I'm like, wow, there's other people that just that collect kind of the same stuff that I do. And then there was people that were really helpful and, you know, cool. And you can find, you get access to cards that you would never see normally. So I think I'm really happy that I got in there. It's great. And I don't like using my page as like an awareness thing. There's people on Instagram that already do a good job of that, like kind of a semi watchdog thing. It's just when I see back, like my biggest pet peeve is backdoor copies. I don't know what it is, but it's
easy to disguise and deceive.
Yeah, I just can't say. It's probably because I've been duped or almost duped by a number of them. I think that's what frustrates me. But when I see stuff like that pop up, the backdoor stuff, I'll post about it. Other than that, I kind of stay away from it because I let other people do it that either A, know a lot more than me, or B, that's kind of like their thing, you know, that they just do. And I just kind of let them. But if I see like a backdoor copy that I know is fake, I'll check with other people and be like, am I seeing this right? This is fake, right? And they're like, yeah. So I put it out there because if somebody else sees it, then they share it. And that's how the stuff gets around. And yeah.
So the Embossed Refractors article and the Prism Pylon, 2012 Prism Pylon 101 article, my feedback to you was like, these are so good because these help answer so many questions that I've had for such a long time. And like, it was funny when I read through, especially like the Prism one, the Pylon one, it was like, there were triggers of like these little pieces that I had found on like a message board one time. And then like, maybe like months later, I found an article with another piece, but then like, you just like, you know, added your perspective and then you consolidated all of this information. Now, like, I know like all that work wasn't something that just like happened in like, you know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes like that. It takes time to like put all that together. And everybody who's read that article in the group is better for it, especially if you have interest in purchasing Prism Pylons. I can't tell you how many messages I got from people that were just like, man, like this was like, I was on the fringe of like trying to get my guy. And now after reading this, like, I really want to go get my guy. And I'm like, yeah, me too. That's what great content will do. So I guess like not everyone is going to like take the time to do what you did to provide like valuable information to a group of people who can appreciate it. So I don't know, like, what's the answer? Like, how do we improve where we're at right now? Is it like niche down and get in smaller groups and communities? Like, how do you think about this?
I think that's it. I mean, I'm passionate about doing kind of researching different stuff. I like research. I like statistics. I like, you know, fantasy sports, all that type of stuff. So when it comes to cards, something I don't know much about, again, it's trying to educate myself. Like with the Pylon, I always thought they were cool. I didn't know much about them. And then I saw, I can't remember what the IG account is, but post that Reggie Bush. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. Cause it's like it's a color match and it looks so cool. And I always knew about the Pylons, but I didn't know like how they came into existence. I thought they were like pack pulled or something. So then I started reading about them and they had an initial release on Cardboard Connection that talked about how Panini did an auction for the first time. And it was like a big deal. And I don't really remember it because back in 2012, like I wanted Andrew Luck cards, but I was buying like Topps Prime or something like dumb, you know. They're trying to give away boxes at the card shop of Prism. I didn't want it. I wanted Topps Prime because it was Topps, right? So I could have easily been, you know, really far ahead in my collecting journey if I would have just taken them. So anyway, I didn't know much about Prism back then. And I realized that, oh my God, there are auctions. And then I saw some of the prices. When you go scroll through like the Panini forum, like all these prices that these cards went for, like Alfred Morris, like $270 was like the top player at the time. And I'm like, this is crazy. And then it's like they get to Panini was posting every time they were doing these auctions. And then they get to the end with the Manning and the Brady. I see the post. If you search it, and somebody listening to this, maybe they can find it. But if you search the post and the message board on Panini, it's like, they preview, okay, Brady's next auction, and then they just don't post anymore. It's like they did the auction and they don't post what the thing sells for. They do it for like everybody else, and then you don't hear about the Manning selling. You don't hear about the Brady and some others. And then the Luck, they're like, they talk about the RG3 sale, and then the Luck was the hot card in that set. So you assume that it went for higher, but they just don't post anymore. It just disappears. So it's kind of like a mystery now. And it's like, where are those cards?
Dude,
it's just, I don't know.
Dude, I'm overly obsessive with, like, especially like the rookie stuff of luck that I have, cards like Prism that I really, really love. And it's like, it literally kills me that I have never seen the pile on one of one, and I've never seen the black. I just want, like, if you own a copy, just take a picture and let me see it. Like, it's like, let me smell it. It's like, what scares me is that example that you had of, like, buying Topps Prime. It's like, there's a lot of people like you. It's like, how many of these, like, I know these aren't packed pulled with the pylons, but, like, just the, how many finites are sitting in boxes somewhere? Like, that's the stuff that keeps me up at night.
And golds too. I mean, yes. like golds are probably in commons boxes in someone's basement. I mean, it gotta be, or in their closet. They have to be.
No doubt about it. So I love getting good content and good information, and appreciate you putting this together. The other thing, like, you recently shared with me, and I think this would be fun to talk through, kind of your far of hierarchy, like your structure around it. Maybe explain, like, what it is and what was the thought process that you put into when building it.
So I do lists, but I don't follow them if that makes sense, or I just kind of stray from. So Zanu on IG, we message back and forth a lot about the Favre stuff, cause he collects a lot of Favre, and he's always talking about, you know, like, I think this is my tiers. Like, he sent me one time, like, a handwritten note of, like, these are my tiers of the cards I'm chasing right now for Favre. And I just keep thinking, you know, I always listen to content about, like, grail hunting and, like, narrowing down the collection. I don't want to be the one, I consolidate, but I want to consolidate eventually into, like, one card. You know, yeah. I don't want to, like, go that far. I kind of like having a wide range of cards, but I want to consolidate sometimes into, like, bigger ones. But so I'm like, I need to put together some type of hierarchy. And I message Zanu. I'm like, hey, I'm going to make a sheet. I'm going to share it with you. Let's just start with like 40 cards or so, 50 cards. And then let's just keep, once we get a formula down, then we'll keep adding cards. But the biggest thing with the Favre hierarchy is, like, we got to figure out how to rank them. So I know people have done tiers and stuff with other players, specifically Jordan. I get that. But, like, I wanted to have a set formula for ranking categories like rarity, and then ranking scarcity, aesthetics, and then like the legacy of the set or the brand. And I wanted to also rank those four categories against each other. So, like, I didn't want scarcity to count for as much as like the legacy of the set. So I felt, you know, him and I talked about like what should be the most important. And I felt, you know, moving forward, legacy should give the most points. So we came up with this thing kind of like grail points. So we assign numbers to each of these categories for each card. I listed a bunch of cards. He listed a bunch of cards right off the top of our head. And we just started scoring them and then seeing where they fell. And then we adjusted, like, okay, this doesn't make sense because, like, you know, a gold X factor out of 10 was higher than like a PMG just because it was out of 10. So I'm like, we got the rarity too high. So we kind of balanced it out. Finally, we got to kind of a formula I think works. And I shared it with some people in the Packers, this Packers Grails group. And, you know, they said, yeah, it makes sense. My goal wasn't to make, because I don't even agree with where every card falls on it. I just want to make something where at least I could say, like, I understand why it's there, even if I don't agree with it. So moving forward, I could use that same formula for, like, other players in my collection or other people that I'm friends with on there that can kind of use that, maybe if it would help them kind of categorize and start looking at, you know, thinking about cards in our collection differently, because then it'll also help you consolidate too. So I know you've had collectors on here that talk about making lists and a hierarchy where, okay, I'm going to cut from the bottom, never from the top. And that's important. And this is just a way to help me kind of categorize cards. And I can look back and say, okay, that wasn't an emotional decision to put this card here. I actually used, you know, the legacy of the brand, the scarcity, the rarity, and the aesthetics to rank it. It falls there for a reason. Don't change it. And now if you, like, Zanu posts, right now he's in this thing like doing a tournament with, I don't know if you've seen his stories now where he does a tournament with it, with, like, you know, a comparison of different parallels and stuff. And I messaged him like, you're doing that to kind of see if we're right about this, right? And he's like, yeah. So he's kind of
public sentiment.
Yeah. So it's kind of falling where we have it. I don't think there's much tweaking that needs to go on, but the number one card on that Favre Grail list is the 98 Central Credentials Now out of 4. That thing's like, I've never seen it. He's never seen it. Nobody I've talked to has seen it. It's just, it's a ghost. It's out of 4. I mean,
when I saw the list and I saw that card at the top, I was like, that, as I was trying to understand it, I was like, that makes a lot of sense. My question would be, and this, if I had developed this for any of the players that I collect, and I stared at it all the time, because I would, it would just make me like want certain cards probably a lot. Like it would intensify that feeling for me. Has that happened to you with like cards that you don't own that are anywhere on that list? Just seeing the name regularly, does that make you want it more?
Oh yeah. Like I want them all. I mean, I want a PMG green too. And well, before that I always forget about the 98 now. Like I forgot that it was out of 4. I mean, it's jersey number. If you could get the ultimate would be like the jersey number 4 out of 4 of the 98 Essential Credentials Now of Favre. Like I mean, that would be it. If you could, that would be the grail of ultimate grails. But I always thought like the 97 green was his number one, but that's because I forgot about that Essential Credentials. So like, and then seeing some cards that I forget about too on there, like there's a lot of Essential Credentials in that, on that list that are near like the top 15, top 10. And it's crazy. Like I want a lot of those. That's the 97 rubies, like that's like the one that I really want when I can get some hobby funds back again, eventually go after that thing. Cause that's probably my next card that I really want on the list. But I mean, that list intensifies that want for that card.
I can only imagine. I want to maybe dig into, before I let you get out of here, we've covered a lot of ground, maybe talk through some of your favorite cards in your collection. Like what are some of your faves and why?
The 24 karat Favre is up on the top of my list. I don't know where I would put, when I say these, I'm just going to list off some. I don't know necessarily where I'd put them, yep, like ranking, but the 24 karat, because of the fact that I only know of 4 copies that exist. I only knew about 3, mine being one of them. Zanu's got one, and then Spur Fanat Tech has the other one. And then somebody else I was talking to on IG messaged me there. He found a raw one that he was trying to get, and the guy won't sell it. So that was the other one that I found out about. But there's only 2 graded. So it's extremely rare. We know about the 24 carats. They're really cool looking, especially in hand. And then the way I got that card, again, I was talking to Zanu because he was at the time, like he was the first Favre collector other than myself that I found on Instagram when I got on. And I was actually the first time I messaged him, I was trying to buy his 99 PMG. And he's like, it's not for sale, buddy. And then we started talking about Favre and it just went on from there. But one popped up on eBay. He got it. I mean, a card that never shows up. And then all of a sudden, like a week later, this thing pops up on eBay. And I'm like, oh my, he's like, you got to go get it. I'm like, that's a lot of money to like drop right now. Cause I was buying stuff. So I'm watching the guy, it was on auction and it's raw. So it's on auction. It's sitting there and I'm at a wedding for a friend. I'm there with my fiance and we're dancing. I'm watching this auction, you know, like music's playing. It's at the reception. I'm sitting at the table. She's yelling at me cause I'm on my phone. I'm just like, I'm starting to watch this auction because it's not going, it's not getting that high. I'm like, God, I could put a bid on this. Like, I'm just going to do it. And I did it. And I won the card while I was basically dancing at the reception. So like the way I got the card, that card being as significant as it is, that's a big one for me. The Favre Red PMG is a big one for me. I just recently got that. I've always loved that set. The Rogers, the 2013 Prism Gold is a big one, and his Leaf stuff. So his Leaf rookie, he has a out of 25 mirror gold out of that too, which I don't think gets enough love. So I love that card. And then, you know, I started collecting. The only one that I collect outside of the Packers or Brewers is Kurt Warner. And I've always loved him since a kid. He was just, I mean, he was like the hobby hype train back when I was, you know, in my prime collecting years. So getting the 2005 Bowman Gold Refractor 101 of his to complete my Bowman Chrome set. So if you have any player that run in football that runs through 2005 Bowman, you can't complete the run unless you have the 101. So finding a collector that had his and then working out a deal for that thing was a big card for me. You know, I have a lot of Brewers stuff too, but I think those, the Favre stuff, the 24 karat, the PMG red, the Playmakers Theater, Beckett, the BGS 9.5 that I have of Favre is another big one too. So those three would be the biggest ones for Favre. And then the Prism Golds for Rodgers, and then his rookie 25 mirror gold leaf out of that set. So
the amazing cards, awesome stories too. I'm just was scrolling through your page, and this, I love this move that you made, which is you just have the 19, looks like you need a few more, so help them out. But you already have the 19, 22, and 23 Prism Gold of Josh Jacobs, and he literally just got there, and you're just
sick,
like,
yeah.
Hey, it's a move I've pulled, and I can appreciate. You get excited, and what better time to buy cards than when you're excited?
Right. I mean, it fits into my Packers PC, and then the Davante Adams, a 2014 gold that popped up recently. I wanted to get that card, but I know somebody who has it listed on eBay. He doesn't really want to sell it. It's just listed for a really high price. And I'm like, I always wanted that card. So then I messaged another person that had it, was able to work out a deal. That was a card I always wanted. So it's like now I got to collect the gold run of Davante Adams. So it's a slippery slope. I mean, mm-hmm. I recently, like a few months ago, picked up a Mason Crosby gold refract or gold prism out of it, his only prism. And it's like, well, how sick am I buying, you know, gold prisms of kickers? But it's
I recently bought a Stephon Gilmore PSA 10 gold prism from when he was on the Colts. I think it was 21 22. I get it mixed up all the time, and it was like, I don't need this card, but I need this card because we were terrible that year. And he was like, as I was sitting in the stadium, he was the only fun thing to watch, was how awesome he was. So there's just these moments, and you just like justify it. It's like, and yeah, that's what I think I call fandom a sickness at times, because it makes you do sick things, but for the love of your collection, right?
Yeah, right. 100%.
Man, I've had a blast chatting with you. This is, we covered a whole lot of ground, collecting information, specific cards, and everything in between. You can follow him at Prism Mike PC on Instagram. Brian, we will have to do this again. Thanks so much, man.
Definitely. Thanks again, Brett.
Really excited that I got a chance to chop it up with Brian. I've had so much fun digging in with him on topics, cards, everything in between. He's writing some amazing content. Really appreciate all the time, energy, and resources he's putting into it, and then also the conversation today. Make sure you go follow him at Prism Mike PC on the Instagram machine. Until then, take care of yourself, take care of others around you. We'll be back, more Stacking Slabs on the other side.